This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, and I am joined today by Aaron Quinn of the Cover One Network and Cover One Buffalo Podcast. We did a little bit of home of home here, so you can go listen to the Cover One Buffalo Podcast. I gave my takes about the Patriots and the matchup from more of like a Bills perspective. I'm having Aaron on right now. We're going to do the opposite. We're going to do the Pats perspective, so you can be covered in all facets of this game. Aaron, I thank you so much for staying on with me here tonight. You and I are going to be about 2 hours of podcasting tonight, so it's a good time so far.
I appreciate it, man. I just when you left our podcast, I said, man, I can only think of maybe two times in my life that I had a conversation with a Patriots fan that didn't end in somebody blocking each other on Twitter or something like that. So it's great to talk to you, and I look forward to keeping it going.
Absolutely. Yeah, I talk to Eric all the time. Both of us are obviously pretty big film nerds. Yeah. And Eric Turner, for those people that don't know who we're talking about, who's also on the Cover One Network. And him and you guys do a great job, obviously. But you're also Bills fans that I can tolerate. So that's always good, too. And
yeah, it's hard to find, too.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I'm in Buffalo for the away half of this, you know, two-time matchup every single year, we're Patriots writers. We don't work for the team. We don't outwardly root for the team. But when we walk through the parking lot, the Bills Mafia still knows that we're from New England, and yeah, and they like still let us hear it. It's great, though. I really think that type of fan base and the atmosphere certainly at New Era is off the charts.
Absolutely. And I always say this, as much as we want the Patriots' demise as a fan base and all this stuff, something that is good for sports, and you see, I'm from New England originally, so when I'm on my Facebook social media or Instagram, it's all my Patriots friends, where Twitter's yeah, kind of my safe space of my Bills fans. And but you see the hatred from everyone else for the Patriots, not just Bills fans. We particularly hate the Patriots, but everyone does. But that villain role is such a good role for sports. And if the NFL loses that villain role, and I don't know that anyone's coming up to replace the villain role of the Patriots whenever Tom Brady and Bill Belichick part ways, there is going to be a hole left there in sports. So you guys own the villain role. You do it really well, and nothing's worse than a villain that wins. And so you've been able to continue that. So you guys deserve all the grief you get. And then you could, yes, just look at us and say, kiss the rings.
We definitely deserve it. I'm not gonna deny that one bit. And I do agree, there is this kind of feeling, I think, across the NFL that people want to see the next thing, right? They want to see whether it's going to be Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, or on the NFC side, there's some good teams that are up and coming. San Francisco, certainly, or Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, got to mention them. But at the end of the day, there is no better villain than Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. They've really dominated that role, and it's been a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the matchup, though, here coming up in a second. But before we do, football playoff races are heating up, and you can follow all the action at betonline.ag as your favorite team makes their way to the end of the regular season. It's all about playoffs and draft picks this week, and betonline.ag is there for you during all the late season drama. Up-to-date information, including odds and lines, every spread, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. So before the next kickoff, head on over to BetOnline, receive your 50% welcome bonus, and be sure to use the promo code CLNS50 and take advantage of our great offer today. Bring the game home with BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And Aaron, you can bet all sorts of things on BetOnline.ag. We can bet how many passing yards Tom Brady's going to have on Sunday. Luckily, the Bills nor the Patriots need to worry about draft picks quite yet. That's the good news. But we want to talk a little bit about the Bills. And the Bills defense, I really want to save some time for them. And I'm not trying to start with the weak point here or anything like that.
Sure.
But I do want to talk about Josh Allen, because I think that he's one of, in my opinion, the most volatile quarterbacks in the league, I would say, of either you're all in on Josh Allen or you're all out, and there's really no middle ground. Where have you seen his growth kind of in his development? Because he is certainly a much better quarterback than he was this time last year, or when they drafted him especially.
Yeah, no, he's one of the most interesting prospects, even unbiasedly as a, you know, fan of the NFL. I have never seen so many takes on one guy, and it goes both ways. And there's the film community and the analytics community and the draft Twitter community, and everybody doesn't really know what to make of this kid. And I think it's pretty simple. He's got all the tools necessary to become a good quarterback. He has 5 years ago, he was in JUCO. He hasn't had the coaching that a lot of these top prospects have had. So he came in, his floor was way lower than a typical first round prospect. And I think that's why a lot of the draft Twitter community had him as a second round, third round possible prospect, because he just didn't show the refinement that these other guys have. He ended up in Wyoming. They just let his athleticism take over. He's the best player on this team. Do whatever it takes to win games. And he did win some games there, but he comes into the NFL. And one of the things I think that gets lost with prospects is where they get drafted to and the type of coaching and development. I think it's hard to quantify coaching and development and spreadsheets and on PFF. And so no one really knows how to talk about that side of things, but good quarterbacks go to bad coaches and they don't progress. I think Josh Rosen's a great example of that. I don't think Josh Rosen is a bad quarterback or would be a bad NFL quarterback if he went to the right situation where a team really developed him and put the tools around him to succeed. Allen has come into that. He's come into a position where this team's all in on him. They want him to grow into what he can be. And I think already in the just a little over a year and a half now of him playing NFL football, his floor has risen. His ceiling hasn't changed of why they drafted him to be the guy to take over this franchise. But I think whether you're a PFF guy or an analytics guy or whatever it is, I think it's hard to look at his body of work this far and say he's better than people thought he probably would be. He's an average NFL quarterback. He has the potential to be an average starter in this league, a Tyrod Taylor type guy. And that floor is a lot higher, I think, than people assumed he would have coming into the league. But as far as this year's growth and development, I think it really starts with obviously the players they put around him. Last year, they had one of the worst offenses I've ever seen anybody put out. From the offensive line was one of the worst units up there with the Arizona Cardinals. You had a wide receiving core that featured Zay Jones as the leading receiver, undrafted rookie Robert Foster, who hasn't even really been able to touch the field for the Bills this year. He came on at the end of the year. Kelvin Benjamin was a super bust. He was the number one receiver going into the year. And Andre Holmes, those are the two guys that started the year last year. Your number one and two receivers were Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes. So he didn't quite have any talent around him. Terrible offensive line. First year under Brian Daboll. So things were just not set up for success year one with Josh Allen. But you saw the athleticism. You saw some of the throws. You saw a lot of the inconsistencies. This year, the intermediate stuff's there. He's really worked on that in the offseason. That's something that we didn't see in college, consistency within the intermediate stuff. That's probably where he's best right now. And one thing that really impressed me, and I saw it at training camp, and was his ability to put a little touch on throws. And now he still has the fastball and he uses it probably more often than he should. And we saw that kind of rear its head the last couple of weeks. But just knowing, he talks about it in terms of like golf clubs and knowing when to use his pitching wedge or seven iron, and he doesn't have to drive the ball every time. And you're starting to see some of that. He's made some really nice throws with touch in the intermediate areas. And that was one of those things that people said he definitely could not do. He's never going to refine that part of his game. And also interesting enough, I don't know if it's the addition of Mitch Morse into this offense, a super smart center, but a lot of the pre-snap stuff, he's seeing the game differently pre-snap. So I think those few things have led to his growth this year. And it doesn't look like a huge leap when you just look at the box scores of what he's been able to do. But when you look at where I think everyone thought his floor was and how he ended last year, it's a pretty substantial leap of going from probably the worst starting passer in the league next to Josh Rosen last year up to he's about in the 20s. In every category, and you know, right on the top of the bottom 10 passers. And I know that sounds weird to Patriots fans, probably like, well, they're celebrating a guy that's in the 20s, but I think that's a pretty substantial leap from year one to year two for this guy. And we'll see, he's got some big games coming up, he's got a lot to prove.
Yeah, and I really thought, first of all, I was extremely impressed by the way he played on Thanksgiving in particular. That was about as big of a showcase game as you can get, playing in Dallas on Thanksgiving, and to be able to put together that kind of game was impressive. But when I watch him play, I see a much more comfortable quarterback within the system, and also just with NFL football. You know, and yeah. I think that really when you watched him last year, or even in that week four matchup earlier in the season, the game did look like sometimes it was overwhelming to him. And mm-hmm. I think now he looks way more poised in the pocket. He's trusting what he's seeing with his eyes. And most of the mistakes that he's making now are not necessarily moments where it's just everything has kind of blossomed and overwhelmed on him and boiled over. It's more just accuracy issues that we know he's probably going to have for most of his career. So I think that that's a big step. I think the scheme, Brian Daboll, I'm a big Brian Daboll guy. I don't know what his... how he's received right now in Buffalo, but yeah. I think he's really done, dicey. I can understand that, but I think he's done a lot of things to curtail the offense, the no huddle stuff, the empty formations, and just presenting Josh Allen with as many big throwing windows as possible, because he knows that the pinpoint accuracy stuff might be a little bit of an issue for him. So I've been really impressed with those couple of things about him. And I think that when you watch him throw the ball, you know, that touchdown pass he threw to Taylor Kroft was one of the best throws I've seen him make.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like one of those downfield bombs. Like, I think it was against Jacksonville last year where he threw that ridiculous bomb down the field. It wasn't like one of those plays. It was just an NFL play. You know, I'm going to start on the left side of the field. I'm going to move the zone defense over that direction. I'm going to come back to the tight end and throw the ball on time and accurately for a touchdown. Boom. Those are the types of plays that you really see him making now that I don't know if he would have made as a rookie or even made earlier this season.
No, the game was way too big for him as a rookie. You're totally right. And as one area you're really seeing it in is the hero ball stuff that he was doing, where he would turn his back to a defense, run four or 5 yards out of a, you know, sometimes a clean pocket, and he would get himself into trouble there trying to make too much happen. You haven't really seen a lot of that. You do see him leave the pocket, and I think there's a misnomer amongst a lot of the Buffalo media, because they kind of still rip on him for leaving the pocket, but I think some of that is the progression of this quarterback. You saw it a little bit last week where he's actually leaving the pocket to pull the defense. Now, it's not necessarily always because he's getting uncomfortable. I think against the Ravens, he was totally flustered and uncomfortable. But a lot of these teams, he's been leaving the pocket to kind of pull the defense in the ways some other more athletic quarterbacks do. And I think that's part of Brian Daboll teaching him how to use his athleticism to his benefit. But definitely they are getting, you know, another thing that gets knocked on about this Bills offense is the lack of a number one wide receiver.
Yeah,
and that guy that can go up and get it. And Josh Allen isn't really that guy. Even though he's an inaccurate quarterback at times, he really isn't the guy that's going to just throw up the 50-50 ball all that much either. He needs the John Browns and Cole Beasley's, guys that create separation, because he's still at the phase in his development where he's not always thrown with anticipation. He's got to see a guy come open, and those are the perfect types of wide receivers that you see him come open. Cole Beasley creates some of the most separation of anyone we've had in Buffalo, similar to a Julian Edelman. He works in the slot, he works in space, he can create that separation, and that's what Josh Allen still needs in his development. So it's a mix of things right now that are leading to his progression and the offense's progression this year. 9 new starters on that side of the ball. Big job for Brian Daboll to take 9 new starters and get them into this offense, especially the guys along the offensive line. A lot of new faces here in Buffalo. So it was a big job to get there. And I think fans wanted to see results early. You get all these new pieces, you want to see the results early. And I think a few things happened to see this offense start to actually work. Was Brian Daboll went up to the booth. I think he's getting a better view there. They started going with that no huddle, which is allowing Josh Allen to see the defense. They're not moving at any faster pace. They're still running the clock all the way down. They're letting Brian Daboll speak in his ear the same way Jared Goff had McVay in his ear a year ago. They're taking that same tactic. And you're starting to see the continuity of these guys having played together now for 10, 15 weeks, and it's not a new offense anymore. And I think you're starting to reap the benefit of the struggles in the first 8 weeks. You're starting to see, all right, now everybody's communicating at a better level and things like that. So it's not a great offense, but I think that it's much improved from what you guys saw in week 4. And that's exciting for Bills fans to know that we're not the worst offense in the league anymore. They've taken substantial jumps forward. And I think there's going to be very few times that Josh Allen looks as flustered as he did last year. Bill Belichick defense is going to be one of those times probably still, but they make great, they made Peyton Manning look flustered at times throughout his career, even when he was up towards the end of his career. So I don't know if you'll ever get over that type of thing where you go up against an elite defense and he doesn't have trouble, but I think against average teams, Josh Allen's a good NFL quarterback against, you know, regular NFL defenses.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up the hero ball thing, because that was kind of where I was going with the poise and the comfortability and the just kind of knowing the game and knowing what the game needs. I saw way less. I watched a couple of games of his today, and I saw just way less of that, way less of the flailing off the back foot, trying to just win with your, you know, all arm type throws and really throwing bad turnovers, which we did see a lot in that week four game. You know, big a couple time. Of those picks were just bad decisions, bad throws. The one thing I wanted to talk about, though, from, you know, just a Patriots perspective of how to attack Josh Allen, his numbers against pressure and handling pressure, and specifically handling blitzes. The PFF, I had them pull it for me, and he is ranked right now 32nd out of 33 qualified quarterbacks in grade under pressure. And it's like 30.3 or something like that. It's catastrophically bad. What have you seen from him? Has he developed that skill at all? Because it looked like Baltimore, like you mentioned, did a lot of the things that confused him and brought a lot of different heat from different places that caused some similar issues to what we saw the Patriots in week four do. Because my guess is that Bill Belichick is going to look at what happened in week four. He's going to look at the Baltimore tape, and he's going to say, we are going to come after him all game long.
Yeah, and even the Steelers had a good amount of success getting some pressure to him in different ways. They don't do, they're not running a lot of the crazy stuff. And we saw the Steelers, I think it was 16 cover zero blitzes, like, and at the end of the game, they just went at him. So that was a little bit overly aggressive. I don't even think Bill Belichick's going to scheme it up that way. I think he trusts that your quarterbacks are, you know, he doesn't have to bring that type of pressure every time Josh Allen drops back to pass. But no, it's a problem. It's clearly his Achilles heel, but for a guy in his second year, he hasn't even played a full slate of 2 years of football. That's fine. That's a problem that I think that he'll be able to adjust to over the next couple of years. It takes young guys time to deal with that type of pressure by some of the best defensive coordinators in the world, and nobody's doing it better right now than the Patriots and the Ravens. So having that experience, I think, is good for a young quarterback. Having that tape is good for a young quarterback. He's constantly talking about that Patriots game as a turning point in who he is and realizing what it means to be an NFL quarterback, and that it's not always about trying to make a touchdown happen on every play, but getting to the next, you know, first down and keeping a drive alive and, you know, throwing a ball away, things like that, and protecting yourself. That was another big one, obviously, he got out of the Patriots game, and that you're just not invincible and your athleticism is not going to just carry you through against a really good defense. But he's definitely played his best football against teams that aren't super aggressive. The, you know, Broncos weren't super aggressive against them. Dallas wasn't. He had his probably two best games against those defenses. So this has been a rough slate of games here for Buffalo Bills fans and the offense. Luckily, the defense has done enough to keep them in these games, but going up against Baltimore and the Pittsburgh Steelers, now coming back up against you guys, I really don't think. We talked about it on our podcast a little bit about the Bills not changing who they are as a, you know, identity. I don't think Bill Belichick looks too much at the tape and does too much different than what he did against Josh Allen in the first game and make Josh Allen prove that he has actually changed, because he hasn't put it on film that he's changed against the type of pressure that the Patriots can dial up. So until he proves that, I think that's the answer to slowing down this Bills offense and slowing down the big play capability.
Yeah. So last year against the Chiefs, Belichick and the Patriots had some success with some of their exotic cover zero looks and stuff like that against Mahomes.
Right.
The first time around, the second time around, they still brought pressure, but they brought it in a different way. So I do wonder if there is a little bit of, okay, we're not going to do exactly the same thing, but we're still going to be aggressive with him. And I think the biggest thing for Josh Allen in this game, you can't throw the three picks. You can't throw him three picks. And I watched the Pittsburgh game, and there was one play that really stood out to me, and it was Pittsburgh brought a blitz, and Allen had John Brown crossing over the middle of the field on just a little underneath shallow route that probably should have been his hot in the progression, my guess, right in front of his face against the blitz. That would be automatic, and he just threw it incomplete down the sideline over everybody's head instead of just hitting the receiver that was right there. And I watched that, and I was like, okay, this is a guy that right now, when he sees blitz, his hot is not his automatic first thought.
No.
Right. And that is something that I think is probably his next step of his progression, because if you go back to that week four matchup too, the Gilmore interception late in that game before Josh Allen got knocked out, he threw a jump ball up to Gilmore that was basically a punt. And you watch that, it was a zero blitz, and there the hot was there, and he just threw it up. Right. And I think that's probably his next step right there. And I'm really interested to see what Belichick does and comes up with, because against mobile quarterbacks in the past, the Patriots have been very zone heavy, trying to keep their eyes on the quarterback, mush rush and contain him in the pocket and do that sort of thing. I don't think that that's what they're going to do against Josh Allen. I think they'll probably come after him. But I want to circle back to something that you actually said about 10 minutes ago after we just went 20 minutes on Josh Allen, which is perfectly okay. You mentioned the supporting cast.
Yeah.
And watching this Bills offense, yeah, they're 22nd in DVOA. Yeah, Josh Allen has ways to go. But it's been really impressive to see the pieces that they've put around him. John Brown is one of my favorite receivers to watch in the league. I know he's not like your prototypical number one guy that you can run the whole thing through. He's not Julio Jones. He's not, you know, Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins. But he is a really underrated separator and a really good route runner. And there's that fourth down play against Pittsburgh where he won on that little out route that wasn't a vertical. You know, it wasn't like he was running right down the field and winning vertically. And he obviously caught the 40-yard bomb over the defender. That was pretty nice, too. Right. But his development has really come a long way. And you mentioned Beasley, too. Just adding that safety valve of a receiver that can get open quickly between the numbers must be huge for him as well.
Yeah, no, one of the things that's most exciting, I think, right now for Bills fans is we've never had this, is GM and coaching staff that are in lockstep and seem to be finding the fits for the things that they have and the tools they need. And like I said, they needed these guys that could separate. And what did they do on the same day in free agency right to start? They go out and get John Brown and Cole Beasley. And you're right, it's not a traditional number one receiver. I think they're still going to be seeking that, but it's not something you can force. And if you can't have one of the rare 10, 15 guys in the world that are a true number one wide receiver, I think this is the next best thing to have, is guys that can create this type of separation, especially for young quarterbacks. So it has been huge for him. I liked John Brown in free agency, but I didn't realize the abilities that he has and how intelligent of a wide receiver is.
He's not perfect receiver. He really is.
And what his benefit to me is his understanding when the play does break down and when Josh Allen gets out of the pocket, he's the first guy coming back to the ball. And Bills just did not have that last year when Josh Allen was getting loose. Guys were just kind of didn't know what their rules were when the play broke down. And he's just a heady guy. He knows what he's doing. He finds ways for Josh Allen to get on the ball. And he's been the most productive wide receiver so far for the Bills this year. But the thing that concerns me about Brown is because he's not that true number one receiver, when you come up against the New England Patriots or even, you know, some of these teams, he can be taken out of a game. And that stinks, because he's really the chain mover for this team. If he's getting the ball and getting, you know, a 7-10 catch game, that's where the Buffalo Bills have been successful. And a game like this, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of production out of a John Brown, because he is so easy to take away. He's not going to go one-on-one on a 50-50 ball and beat Stephon Gilmore. He's just not. So they still need a little bit better, but the like I said, from the additions that they had last year in that wide receiver room, it's a massive change here in Buffalo, and it's only trending up. The Brandon Bean's done a great job. They have a lot of cap space, a lot of draft picks, so there's quite a bit of ways to continue to add to that, but it's a nice foundation that makes us an actual competitive NFL offense for the first time in a while.
Yeah, number 24 versus John Brown's going to be a lot of fun. First time around, and it's going to be fun this one. He got Gilmore a few times the first time around. Those like underneath stuff, you know, selling a vertical and then breaking it off one way or another. You got to respect the speed a lot. Before I move on to the defense, though, I do want to ask about the tight ends and Devin Singletary, because I think that I mentioned it on your podcast. If I was an opposing offensive coordinator, I'd throw a ton of passes to the backs and the tight ends against the Patriots defense. The Patriots, we'll get to Singletary in a second, but the Patriots drafted Damian Harris 8 picks before the Bills drafted Dawson Knox. And it's one of those, you know, I hate revisiting the draft and being revisionist history and all that kind of stuff. But Damon Harris has not gotten on the field as a rookie. And Dawson Knox has made some plays for this Bills offense. And I think he actually made a pretty big catch in the week 4 game, too, if I remember correctly. So what have you seen from him and Croft? And are those two guys that you think can be big time factors in this game?
Yeah, no, I do. I think that they're definitely part of what is going to make this offense succeed. And Croft has been a guy that we haven't really seen a whole lot of because he re-injured his foot and then he sprained his ankle. So he's slowly gone back into the field. We hadn't really seen anything from him until that last week. Big touchdown play. That was his first touchdown of the year. So yeah. I don't know how much his involvement is or if he's peaking at the right time, but Knox has been a really pleasant surprise for Buffalo Bills fans. This has been a really nice draft class so far with Ed Oliver, Cody Ford, obviously Devin Singletary, and Knox. I wouldn't blame anyone for not drafting Dawson Knox, though, where he was taken. I think now in hindsight, it looks like
a raw prospect.
Super raw prospect. And Ole Miss just did a disservice to a lot of their pass catchers.
College offenses, not to interrupt you, sorry, but college offenses have an issue with using pass catching tight ends. They have these huge playmaking tight ends, and these college coaches want them to block on every single play. Foster Moreau, Dawson Knox, Kahale Waring to a lesser degree, but him also. You can go right on down the line with a lot of these guys that were just wasted in their college offenses.
And it's a real detriment to the players, because I think if he was in a system where he was utilized more in an NFL way, where he had the full route tree down, he's got the athletic ability. He has the blocking ability where he could have been a much higher prospect. So the Bills took a chance on that. And I think so far it's paid off, especially to where he's drafted. Now he has a lot of flash plays. He's shown up on the, you know, stiff arm plays and tough guy plays and stuff like that, but he's had a lot of inconsistencies as well. He's got I think it's the highest drop rate in the league right now. Bills in general have one of the highest drop rates in the league right now. So Dawson Knox has contributed to that, and it's been in some big spots where it's a third and long, and even though the Bills have done well on third and long, he's dropped some big balls that kill drives. So he's not quite a finished product by any stretch of the imagination. It'd be nice if Croft stepped up a little bit more, because I think they want that more reliable veteran talent out there and allow Knox to come into his progression on his own. But he's had a very nice progression, because I didn't think this was going to be a guy that saw the field much at all this year, unless it was at the end of the year you start to get him in a few reps or maybe create some plays to get him in space because of his athleticism and just try to get him the ball in space and see what happens. But he's actually been a pretty big point of this offense and a really nice addition even in the run game. I don't want to see him one-on-one with defensive ends anymore, like we saw in Baltimore and him get blown up by Judon, but he's done a nice job blocking. He fits the look and feel of what they're going for at tight end. So it could be a nice piece to this offense for the next few, 5 years or so.
Yeah, I really like him. I agreed with you 100% that he was a raw prospect. I think I had him like a fourth or fifth round grade on him coming out, which, end of the third round, it makes sense. It's not a good, terrible reach, but it was just, there was just so little tape of him actually doing anything as a receiver. I think he had something like 7 catches in his last year at Ole Miss or something like that.
He hadn't had a touchdown since he was a high school football player.
Right, and they did have, they had A.J. Brown. They had a lot of guys on that Ole Miss offense, that receiver that the ball was running through. That's where the ball was going all the time. So that's why he didn't play a ton. We're going to move over to the defense, I promise. But Singletary, I think this is a really interesting player in this game now, because the Patriots, any team, I think, struggles with linebackers on backs. If you can get your running back isolated on a linebacker in coverage, every team has success with that. But I think Singletary is the type of guy that could really give the Patriots problems, specifically in the passing game. How have you seen them use him in the passing game? Because I was looking at his snap distribution, and they do flex him out a decent amount.
Yeah, he gets out there, and he's not getting used in the way that fans want, which is you see every week where people are just running beautiful screens. The Bills have had trouble setting up any type of screen game, so I don't think that that's something you have to worry about. And some of that's Allen, some of that's the offensive line, but they are flexing him out, and he actually has a lot better hands than I thought, because you did not see a lot of that from him in college. That was another guy that he just got pounded the ball. He was running the ball all the time, workhorse back in college. That was a concern, but you didn't see a lot of him catching the ball in college. So you were a little concerned about that. He did it great all through training camp, and it's been a part of the offense early on when he was only getting the 10 to 15 touches, a lot of that was coming from looks in the passing game. They were trying to get him involved, get him into space. He's a guy they want in space. He's shifty in the, but he's not a highly athletic guy. When you look at the RAS scores, he was one of the lowest rated RAS score running backs to come out in years. But when you get him with a linebacker or even a lot of cornerbacks, he is just shifty enough to just get out of their way and get that extra 5-6 yards. And that's what they're looking to do. Allen doesn't go to him a ton in the passing game, but I think that this week that would be a good matchup to work with the tight ends and getting Singletary out there and kind of putting your linebackers and safeties in some conflict to try to create some space there. Because like I said, I think your quarterbacks are going to do a good enough job locking down the Bills wide receiver. So you have to kind of create some conflict in the middle and with the linebackers to get anything going against this defense. And Singletary's got the talent to do it. But he's also another guy that has struggled with drops this year, even when he is targeted. He, you know, just the rookie problems with both Singletary and Knox, but bright future, I think much brighter than any Bills fans thought when they drafted him. He's the reason they were willing to move on from Shady McCoy here this year, and he's taken over Frank Gore's job since he's come back from that injury. And I wasn't a proponent of that. I thought, okay, this guy's had nice production on 10 carries. I don't think you just give him 20 carries and he maintains that production. Like, that's usually not how it works, but that he actually has maintained in games where he's rushed for 20 yards. He's still averaging about 5 yards a clip. So he's a nice piece to this offense, and he's going to be a huge factor as to whether or not they can hang in this game or even try to steal it, because they're not going to beat the Patriots through the air. This is going to be, I think, a low scoring game where yards are hard to come by, and Devin Singletary is going to have to shine for the Bills.
Yeah, I remember early in the season, his yards per carry was like something insane because it was such a small sample size that he's averaging like 11 yards per carry or something like that. But he is still up at 5.3, which is nothing to sniff at. And just looking down the box score, you know, it's all over four and a half, you know, five. So, yeah, he's a player. Patriots fans know this. You get one play, you know, against Houston. It was the one Duke Johnson play where the Houston snuck him out of the backfield on Kyle Van Noy and it went for a touchdown. That's all it takes in some of these games. And especially in this game specifically, I think it's going to be a rock fight. I assume it's probably going to be somewhere in the teens. It's going to be cold. It's going to be a defensive kind of battle unless it really shocks us and they go high flying offense with these two offenses being kind of middling offenses. But regardless, it's going to be four or five plays for each offense that's probably going to make the difference in the game. And they can get Singletary out there and isolated. I'm also sure that Dable's idea of flexing him out has a lot to do with giving coverage indicators to a young quarterback. That's a big part of it too. You send Singletary out wide and he's got a linebacker across from him. It's going to tell Josh Allen it's most likely man coverage, and that's going to make things a little bit easier for him too. All right, finally, let's go over to the strength of this Bills team. The strength of the Patriots team too, honestly, is defense as well. So these two teams are, you know, differently built, certainly with their quarterback's experience, but similar kind of seasons for them with the defense carrying the load. I wanted to ask you though about the run defense for Buffalo, because right now they're one of those teams that's dominating, you know, against the pass, third in DVOA against the pass, but 19th in DVOA against the run. They've done good in recent weeks. Correct me if I'm wrong. Zeke, James Conner, those guys, they shut down pretty well. So what's been the turnaround, if there has been one, and where have they kind of been vulnerable in the past?
Yeah, so they were playing a really nice stretch on both sides of the defense up until about their bye week. They had an early bye week. And when they came out of that stretch, they ran into the Dolphins, who ran all over us. And that was really embarrassing. And then Adrian Peterson had a big day all over him, too. And it was starting to become a big narrative here in the Buffalo media and with fans and stuff like that about this run defense. And is this the Achilles heel of a Sean McDermott defense? And what's going on? And when you got rid of all the kind of narrative and scare, what's going on with this defense, and you just looked at the film and looked at this defense, Sean McDermott preaches the 1 of 11, and no more is that true than on the defensive side of the ball. And this defense doesn't do anything super fancy. They're pretty much in their base defense at all times, and it's all about gap integrity and being in your spot, and that works in the passing game and in the running game. And one guy falls out of his gap or anything like that in the NFL, you know, running backs are going to take advantage of that, and that's what was happening. It was always somebody else. You know, Shaq Lawson's been fantastic in the run, but if he's out of position, or, you know, Tremaine Edmonds, he's still grown. He's only a 21-year-old middle linebacker, and he shoots his gun a little bit too soon on some plays, and he gets caught out of position. Matt Milano is really aggressive. So it was always somebody different. I think people were trying to place blame on one guy, but it was just kind of the defense was a little bit discombobulated in the run game there for a little while. They have improved on it, I think, but when you look at the box scores and when you look at some of these games, teams are just getting away from it. Dallas should have stuck to getting the ball to Zeke. He was having a pretty good game. Same thing in Denver. They were averaging 5 yards a carry with Lindsay. They just got away from it, even though it was a close game at times. And even against the Steelers, I thought that was the Steelers' path to success. I'll take the Bills' defense over Duck Hodges every day of the week. They got away from the run game. So I'm not sure if the run game's fixed yet. I know a lot of fans are confident that they have fixed it. I don't think anyone's challenged it for four quarters in a close game. So I do think Bill Belichick's, that's going to be the strength of what you guys are going to try to do, is running at the Bills. I don't think they want to, same as the Bills offense doesn't want to get into a game where they have to pass to win. I don't think Tom Brady wants to go up against this secondary and have to drive the ball down the field consistently through the air. You want to get the run game established. I think it is still the weakness of this defense, even though they've gotten better. But some of the reasons they've gotten better is the defensive line has really come on in the last month of football. Shaq Lawson is playing fantastic football. He's not yet where he was drafted to be, but he's playing great football. Ed Oliver has really come on as of late with this defense. He got benched right around the middle of the season. He took that really well. He's grown and done a really good job. Jordan Phillips, much more in the passing game than the running game, but he's come along. A guy that's playing very well in the run game is Star Latulele. Buffalo fans hate Star Latulele because he never shows up in the box score. He's not a guy that's going to get any sacks. He's just not that kind of player, but he's been doing a really good job when it comes to maintaining his gap and kind of setting the tone for the defense. So you're seeing the defensive line start to kind of play better as a unit. And I think that's helping because the strength of this defense is the defensive backs, and the defensive line isn't as strong as it has been in the past, but when they're all playing together and playing their 1-of-11, they are a much better unit. So again, I still think it's the weakness. I think there's some areas to exploit with that, but it's going to be a battle in the trenches. This is going to be one of those games that I think the NFL is not going to want as the only game on a Saturday afternoon, because it's going to be low scoring. It's going to be a game in the trenches. It's not going to be a fun fantasy football afternoon for the common fans, but it's the kind of game that I'll admit, I love it. I love low scoring defensive trench battles, big guy battles. So I think that's what we're expecting to see here on Saturday.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think all of us can kind of appreciate that watch these games really religiously and really deep and dive into all the little nuances of line play. It's funny that you mentioned that they basically play one front, because I was talking to Patriots center Ted Karras about the Bills a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, I think they were in the same front for every single snap against us in week four. You know, they play that 1-4-3 look, and that's pretty much all you're going to get. I think they had changed it up a little bit on third down every once in a while to give more of like a pass rushing type look, or more guys standing up over the ball and things like that. But for the most part, it's that McDermott 4-3, and they just kind of let ride or die with that front, and they obviously ride with it more than they die with it, for sure. You mentioned Ed Oliver, you mentioned some other names there. Who to you is kind of a game wrecker on that front? Who's the one guy on the defensive front that you would say has the potential to really have a big impact on this game?
Well, normally I would say Jerry Hughes. He's been a little quiet this year, but he still has that first step. But really, the guy who stood out the most to me on this defensive line is Shaq Lawson. The stuff that he has done, he's by far their best run defender, and he's actually put together some nice pass rush in the last month here, which I've been very hard on Shaq Lawson. He hasn't lived up to his draft type, which I usually don't blame guys as to where they get drafted. It's not their fault. But he for three seasons sat around and didn't really learn, it seemed, any pass rush moves. He always came at guys with a ball rush. He didn't really have any other moves. He didn't seem to have the speed or power to get through some of these big tackles in the NFL. And it just felt like he was leaning towards just a flat out bust. And when his contract's up, it's up, and thanks for nothing. And he's really come on as of late. He's got 6.5 sacks on the year. And it's not only that, he's causing sacks for other guys. If you watch back that Pittsburgh game, Jordan Phillips had 2 sacks. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, both of those sacks were assisted by Shaq Lawson creating pressure, moving the pocket, and making Hodges run around. So he's really stood out to me, and I'm on the fence. He's in a contract year. I would love to see the Bills re-sign a guy like Shaq Lawson, because he's the kind of guy that Bill Belichick would be drooling over, you know, if he hit free agency, because he can play all along the front of the offensive or on the defensive line. But they've got some guys. Jordan Phillips has had a really nice year as far as pass rushing goes. He's not a great run defender, but he has 9.5 sacks, and he didn't make the Pro Bowl this year. Bills media is kind of buzzing about that. He's only second to Aaron Donald in sacks. And I'm not saying he's a disruptive player in the sense that Aaron Donald is, but he's a lot faster than he looks. And Tom Brady, in my history of watching Tom Brady, he struggles with pressure up the middle. And I think that's probably the weakest point of this offensive line that we're playing against, even though they've done a good job. When you lose an Andrews, that's a hard spot to fill. And I think they've done a pretty good job, all things considered. But I think that's really the area the Bills want to attack. And he's, you know, between him and Ed Oliver, there's some speed and explosion there where I think that they can create some issues for Tom Brady to get right in his face.
Yeah, absolutely. And based off of everything that we're talking about here, I really don't want to see Tom Brady drop back to pass 40 times on Saturday. But this secondary, you know, I love watching the Patriots secondary just because those guys have played so many snaps together, and certainly some of them, like the McCourty twins and Daron Harmon, going all the way back to Rutgers and the McCourty twins their entire lives, obviously. Sure. But those guys have such great continuity that they can do so many different things back there. And when I watch the Buffalo secondary with Hyde and Poyer and Trey White and Levi Wallace now, it's similar, right? Like they can just, they have a lot of experience back there. They've played a lot of snaps and a lot of football together, and they're starting to really get comfortable in what McDermott's asking them to do. They play just about every coverage in the book. You know, you look at their coverage charts and it's like they play cover one, they play three, they play quarters, they play two, they play everything.
Yeah.
And that kind of diversity is often really difficult for any NFL quarterback, even a guy like Tom Brady.
It's been phenomenal. And it's one of the first things that they did when Sean McDermott came in was bring in Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, and nobody knew about Jordan Poyer here in Buffalo. Who is this guy? We had an ex-Browns coach on staff, and he just was pounding the table for Jordan Poyer and said, you got to get him over. He's going to fit what we're trying to do. They did that. I always liked Micah Hyde. I didn't think he would become the player he has. I thought he was a pretty average defensive back, a smart defensive back, not super athletic. He's been fantastic. And the two of them together has been a dream come true for Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott, because they're really interchangeable. That either one can do either thing that you're asking them to do. So that creates confusion on its own, because just because you see Jordan Poyer up against the line doesn't mean that he's not going back into coverage and Micah's coming up. They do all kinds of fun things with that. The real shame in this is the fans that just watch the broadcast don't even get to see the amount of fun that this defensive back group is able to do and what they do. And so I'm off of, after the game, we're talking about the game and people say, Micah Hyde didn't do anything. It's like, well, he didn't show up in the box score, but he definitely did stuff to trick the other quarterback. You know, he is running this defense essentially. And you see it sometimes, he'll come up even to the linebackers and make sure people are in place. And that's really where the strength of this defense is. You have two smart safeties that are interchangeable. They can roll coverages. And we keep talking about how base Sean McDermott's defense is. It operates out of a base. But it gets pretty exotic in the pre-snap looks that they're showing quarterbacks. And even guys like Tom Brady have been confused by this because they're pretty interchangeable. They have a lot of athleticism. They just have good defensive backs where they can get away with some stuff of showing you a look and then getting back into a different look post-snap. And this happens so fast. I think the average fan doesn't realize if you're seeing cover one pre-snap and then they get into a two-man, a two-high safety look post-snap, like it changes everything in the blink of an eye. And if the quarterback and the tight end aren't on the same page, you see it in Tom Brady's frustration. That I don't think Tom Brady's fallen off. It's the people around him. And if you can create some of the confusion for the pass catchers and those guys aren't in the spots that Tom Brady's demanding them to be in, that is how you get into Tom Brady's head and make him have a bad day, which I think we've seen Sean McDermott be able to do some. So it's fun, and it's a shame that the average fan that just doesn't want to watch all 22 or doesn't really care about it doesn't get to see the kind of chess match that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier are playing with the other quarterback and offensive coordinator and how they use these defensive backs.
Yeah, absolutely. And Micah Hyde is the guy that I've always circled. And Trey White's a great player, and it's similar to Gilmore. Gilmore is a great player, but Hyde and Devin McCourty are the two guys that are running the back end for these two teams.
Absolutely.
And their ability to be so interchangeable, as you said, and disguise things and show one thing and change the picture after the snap and play deep or play middle robber or play man-to-man or do whatever you want with those guys. If Micah Hyde deserves more pub than he gets, I think. Earl Thomas making the Pro Bowl is a big sticking point for me right now, because Micah Hyde and Devin McCourty both had better seasons than Earl Thomas did, and he made the Pro Bowl over them. For people that really want to see great Micah Hyde, I'm sure Patriots fans mostly watch this game, but that was one of the best safety games I've seen all year in week four against the Patriots. I mean, he was everywhere in that game, and he had a pick, so they got the box score stat padded as well. But man, oh man, was that guy just all over the field in that game.
He's been super fun to watch. And he even within Buffalo, he's not a guy that gets enough credit because it just doesn't show up. It's one of those things. It's really why my favorite thing to evaluate is safeties, because it's the thing that just you can't see it in the broadcast what's really going on. So you have to get in there and look. And they really do create so much of the confusion that goes on in the rest of the field if you have a smart athletic safety that can do some of that stuff. Another guy I think that doesn't get enough credit around the league is Taron Johnson. He is a guy that I didn't really know much about coming out, but when he's not in, this Bills defense is totally different. The communication that he has with Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds roaming the middle of that field and giving them that type of athleticism that they have has been a game changer, because Bills for years have been killed in the slot. It's in my opinion, it's the toughest defensive back position to play, is to be a slot cornerback. Everybody thinks, oh, you put your best two cornerbacks out on the edges because that's where all the good receivers are. But a guy that has to go up against a Julian Edelman and you can't bump him because he's off the line of scrimmage and he can go in any direction, he has the whole field to work with, that's way harder than going one-on-one with the wide receiver one of another team most times. It's just a lot of field to cover. There's a lot of communication. He's come in and done a fantastic job. He plays with a lot of fire. So he's another guy. There's something about what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, they're not always finding the big names. Levi Wallace, an undrafted free agent, has started a lot of the year. He's struggled at times. Kevin Johnson, former first-round pick that seemed to be a bust, he's come in and done a nice job. But every year they just replenish everything after the Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Trey White. That's your big three on the back there. But every year they just seem to replenish with guys that fit the scheme, know where they're supposed to be and know what they're supposed to do. And I think having the leadership of your Poyer and Hyde are keeping that ability to just bring other guys in and say, all right, this is where you're supposed to be. We're going to make sure these guys know where they're supposed to be. And it's just created a unit that has just given almost every quarterback they've come across trouble.
Yeah, it sounds so much like the Patriots in their secondary, in the way you describe it, and the safety play. Before I let you go, I think that this debate in Buffalo has probably been more contentious than it is in New England, because you had Stephon Gilmore on the team. But Gilmore versus Trey White, they're not actually going to go up against each other on Saturday, obviously. But two of the best cornerbacks in the league right now, I'm sure, you can take the Gilmore side if you want. But I wanted to get into a little discussion here of what makes Trey White great, and I'll say what makes Gilmore great, and we can kind of compare the two a little bit here.
Yeah, so I get killed on this a lot because I give Stephon Gilmore a lot of credit. I love defensive back play. He's just at the top of the NFL. He's playing at a rate that you see when you see Darrell Revis playing at the top of his game, or even Ty Law at the top of his game. And Buffalo fans refuse to give him credit because he didn't always have the best attitude here. He was on some really bad teams, a lot of coaching changes. He just kind of fell off.
He hammers the coaches in Buffalo during his time there.
And when you're a fan, it's hard to see that. It wasn't a good situation here for a lot of years. This week he said they seem to finally be doing it right now. He also gave them credit. I like Stephon Gilmore a lot. I think he's a great player. I love Trey White a lot, though. He was drafted to replace Stephon Gilmore. That's big shoes to fill. And he has done a very good job of doing that. When they drafted him, I would have been happy with him being a Leotis McKelvin type guy. That's just a 7-8 years as you're starting, you know, maybe number two cornerback of where he was drafted. He's far exceeded that. You think he's one of the best cornerbacks in the league. So I'm not going to be able to take a super hard stance. What I will say is I think where Trey White is, as young as he is ahead of where Stephon Gilmore was when he was as young as Trey White is today. So as far as like a future, I don't know where the ceiling is for Tre'Davious White and the makeup that this kid has. He was a captain at LSU. That's a big deal, being a captain in the LSU defensive backs. He's just made up the right way. He works at it all the time. I think he's just a guy that's going to keep getting better. He's very hard on himself. He's his own biggest critic. So he's got all the right makeup and athleticism to be one of the best to do it. And I can't wait for the Buffalo Bills to lock him up to with a massive extension, a Stephon Gilmore size extension as soon as the season's up, because you need a guy like that in the NFL nowadays. And you guys know it better than anybody.
Yeah, it's great, you know, to have a guy like Gilmore. And I think that the point that you made about Gilmore not being at that point of his career where Trey White is now is really key, because a lot of it had to do with the coaching that happened in Buffalo. But I think that what Gilmore needed to get to this point is he needed a coach like Bill Belichick that was going to push him. Yep. That was going to force him to really study, to really perfect his craft and really work on his technique, but also really to take a hold of the mental aspect of the game from a studying standpoint. I don't think that anybody in Buffalo at the time, you know, Rex Ryan or any of those coaches, really pushed him to get in the film room and to learn opposing receivers' tendencies and their route breaks and their patterns, and then also to learn the passing game of the opposing offense. You know, he's at the point now where they have him studying the concepts of, like, he'll know the 5 or 6 big concepts that Daboll likes to run.
Yeah.
And he'll know which formations he likes to run them from. So he'll then anticipate routes based off of that film study. That was just not something that he was doing 3 or 4 years ago in Buffalo, you know, and it is what it is. And I think that he's really grown into that person now. And he said it the other day on with Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders does that, like, if you ball, you get the call thing. Yep. And Gilmore got the call after the Bengals game. And Deion, you know, he said to Deion, it's year 8 now. So I'm a veteran now. I understand the work. I understand the film and the preparation that it takes to be great. He didn't understand that early on in his career, like a lot of people. Trey White, I think he seems to be kind of ahead of that curve, and maybe Sean McDermott and that staff has something to do with that. So just pushing him to that level. I think that both of these guys, though, it all starts with the feet. They're both guys just have tremendous footwork. Gilmore's footwork, I think, is rivaled in the corners that I've seen play in, you know, my adulthood, with only Revis, I would say.
Yeah.
Just in the ability to really trust your feet, trust your technique, and trust that your eyes are going to tell you where to go and not to just guess. None of these guys don't guess. The good corners don't have any of that in them.
No, and I love your point, because I don't think it gets stressed enough about coaching when prospects come into the league and you just have a good prospect and you expect them to just be as good as they were, hit the ceiling that they were supposed to. But the coaching and development that goes on in the NFL and the lack of it is surprising at a lot of teams. And we saw that in Buffalo with the Chan Gailey years and the Doug Marrone years and just prospects not living up to their potential. It wasn't because those guys are busts. All these guys are good enough to live up to their potential.
Right.
It's how you develop and how you reach out to these guys and get them going. And for the Bills, Sean McDermott's done a nice job. I don't know if he'll ever get to the level Bill Belichick is at getting the most out of talent. And because what happens in New England, we see it all the time, is guys will play lights out in New England, go somewhere else, and they're just another guy.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen yet in Buffalo. But no, Trey White has taken to that whole mindset of grinding film, learning things. But I think where Stephon Gilmore, my concern with Stephon Gilmore is he's going to play a lot longer than people think, and a lot longer in New England than people think. He's not a guy that gets involved in a lot of contact. I think he's got the athleticism type to play a long time like a Charles Woodson, and I think he could convert over to safety at any point he wants when he gets tired of playing cornerback, and he has the intelligence to do it. So he's not going anywhere for a long time. I've made the case for him in this current generation of cornerbacks. I think he's probably the most likely to be a Hall of Fame candidate out of this current generation. A lot of people say, oh, you're crazy, look at his stats, and I'm like, I don't know, man. He shuts people down. It's a total different ball. You don't get these types of stats that you know, some of these other guys are able to get with the interceptions and stuff. But he would call them
zone corners, the guys that get the stats.
Yeah, and it's true. And people get frustrated with Tre'Davious White because you know, balls do get caught in front of him at times when they're playing zone, and people don't understand that they are in zone, and he will allow some. You can't do much about zone. Your job is to keep the guy in front of you. So he does his job. He keeps the guy in front of him and makes the tackle. But yeah, Stephon Gilmore going to a mostly man coverage defense, it's really allowed him to shine. I'm worried that he's going to be there for a long time and just lock out whatever number one wide receiver we do end up getting is going to have to go up against him twice a year. And that terrifies me.
Yeah, it's funny because I think a lot of people sum it up with Gilmore, and you know, it seems too simplistic, but actually a lot of the defensive players will say Devin McCourty has been kind of an advocate for this. Steph's got that guy and we got everybody else, you know, and that's like been the mentality all year. And they just know that he's going to take that one guy and he's going to at least make him work for every single thing that he gets. Maybe, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, the great receivers, they all get a couple catches in, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's going to happen. But he just makes every single one of those guys really work. And the whole defense for the Patriots has really been built around this year. Gilmore's got one guy, and we got the other four. And that's really where the whole thing starts, and it's been awesome to watch.
Yeah, Bills fans, there's every time he does get burnt, they love to get out the memes of burnt toast and stuff like that. And I've gotten in a lot of trouble with Bills fans because I'll say, well, if you actually go look at that play, it was a miscommunication. Like, it wasn't a Stephon Gilmore getting burnt. He just doesn't do that anymore. He did it in Buffalo. It's just not a thing that he does anymore. He's not going to get burnt. If he does, they were probably in zone instead of man, and somebody was misplaced or out of communication, or he wasn't where he's supposed to be in that zone. But yeah, it's going to be a long day for John Brown. And it's unfortunately, again, the broadcast view, we're not going to get the look, you know, downfield of what's going on, because that's going to be a battle. And I can't wait to crunch it on the All-22.
Yeah, knock on wood for Patriots fans, Gilmore has two games away from pitching a shutout in terms of touchdowns allowed this year. He's got a big goose egg right now.
I would love touchdowns to ruin that for you guys.
Yeah, it might happen. I'm not going to rule it out completely, but it's pretty amazing to think that he might go 60 games without allowing a touchdown with the amount of snaps, obviously, he plays in coverage, too. It's pretty insane. Yeah, Aaron, thank you so much for doing this. I know we went a lot longer than planned, but that's okay. We had a good time with this. And tell everybody where they can follow you and what you want to plug anything at all, go right ahead.
Awesome, man. No, I appreciate you having me on. People can find me at AaronQuinn716. I try to take it pretty easy on New England fans. I grew up in Connecticut and lived in Maine most of my adult life. I'm over here in Buffalo now for the last 7 years. So all my friends are Patriots fans, so I get it. This is a big week for me. But you can find me on Twitter doing that, and then you know, on our podcast. And we mostly cover the Bills, but over at Cover One, we have a lot of draft coverage. So as the season ends and you get ready for the draft, we do a lot of draft coverage. So follow at Cover One or at Cover_1, and there's a lot of draft coverage stuff going on. It's a great team that we work with over there, and you know, I really want the Bills to win, but most of all, I hope and I always say this, that both teams come out of the game healthy, and that it's just a good fun game here. It's a game that matters, a divisional game that matters in Gillette. I don't know the last time the Bills were in a game at this late in the season with the Patriots that actually meant something to either team. So this is a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun for us too. You know, it's funny, I said this on your pod, but it's nice to like have a team like Buffalo that's been pushing the Patriots all year long, and not have it be like a, you know, 2-8-8 teams or 9-7 teams going for the division, but two teams that are going to win probably 11 plus games this year. But Buffalo will get to 11 probably too, at least. And just to have two teams in the AFC East that are actually very good football teams and have a case to be made to be, you know, top 3-4 teams in the entire conference is a lot of fun. It's been way too long for the Patriots to have a game like this. You know, they deserve a game like this.
Absolutely.
After all this time, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on. We'll definitely have you on again. Could you imagine a Patriots Bills playoff game? Because it's not completely out of the question.
It's not out of the question, and I've thought about it for so many years. So I would love to see that happen, just because I'm one of those sports fans that believes, you know, I'm an old Red Sox fan, and I always believed you had to get through the Yankees to get to the World Series. You know, you have to beat the guys that have been in your way the whole time in order to get to the top of the mountain, the Jordan and the Pistons type of battles. And I would love to go up against the Patriots when it matters the most. And it's just kind of even as a measuring stick of our organization, and see where you're at against the best to ever do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a lot of fun in this game on Saturday. Will be a lot of fun. We'll have you covered completely on clnsmedia.com from the game on Saturday, on the YouTube page, on the website with my 10 things and all those types of stuff. I'll be back next week on the podcast, probably mostly recapping this game. We'll get a little bit into the Dolphins, but hopefully that game we don't have to talk about too much, and we can really focus on breaking down what happened in this game. But until next time, signing off for Aaron Quinn, my guest. Thank you very much again for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.